hang in there.
It is. Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to a major championship edition of The Smiley. Smiley Kaufman was waiting the entire pre-show to make that sound effect. It's water. It's water, ladies and gentlemen. It's still water.
Canned water here in Port Rush, Ireland. So I'll be shotgunning waters out of the golf course the entire week. No bottled waters.
Does the Northern Irish water, does it taste purer? Does it have a distinct, you know, North Sea flavor to it? What give us a water review.
Not great. It's not a great water. And I got water all over this mic. So hopefully that's not not screwing up with the audio and all of this. So apologies if you hear me caressing my mic right now.
It's a good little ASMR for the people at home. Smiley sounds like he's broadcasting from underneath the North Sea. That is the reason why.
And Smiley, I got the window open, the door open here with a nice breeze. Let me just give you a little view here.
Yeah, please.
Kind of just let you know what I'm working with.
Yeah.
I don't think there's AC in this room.
Typically not in the UK. Okay. All right. So you got
kind of see things. I don't know.
Is that an ocean? Oh, that's the ocean right there. I believe that's the North Sea. Somebody's going to yell at me in the comments and tell me I have no idea what I'm talking about. And I'm going to pull up Google Maps right now. We're going to search Royal Port Rush. We're going to make a educated guess as to what body of water that is. Let's zoom out. Yeah, that could be the North Sea. North Atlantic Ocean. That's probably right. It's close enough.
I got no idea.
Smiley, I'm having the golf, the year-long equivalent of the Sunday Scaries. Like, I can't believe this is the last major of 2025. Feels like just yesterday we were setting up shop in Augusta, talking to Ben Crenshaw.
Do we want the PGA Championship to go back to August? I don't know. How do we feel about that? Because I really do like golf for, you know, every month has a big event. And, you know, technically, if they ever figure out the playoffs for the PGA Tour, then you kind of have it. I think the calendar's fine.
I agree with that. I mean, I think that it's we've talked about this several times on the show now. It goes back to the conversation you have with James Colgan, where it's like, there's almost this deflating thing that happens post open before we either, you know, go into a Ryder Cup and a Ryder Cup year, or, I mean, you can make the same sort of deflating comment about the President's Cup, depending on how competitive that is. But yeah, I wouldn't hate the PGA Championship going back there. And then I guess that would mean the players you play without overseed. You could get like a Bermuda version of that at Sawgrass by pushing that back.
Back to May.
It's just like, can you wait? Well, you know, are you going to be bummed not having a big golf event in March, or can we move something there?
Bale's always in March. And then, you saw the news that Doral is coming back to the PGA Tour next year. That's going to be in late May. So that'll kind of add some juice to that time of the year
as a signature event. It sounds like,
So interesting stuff. That was kind of some, breaking-ish news, that's happened this week too.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot happening. I'll also preface this by saying, how are you doing on the back end of the travel? We both had travel issues. You and I had unexpected stopovers. You stopped over in London, and I was in Jacksonville. I was going to ask you if you wanted to trade.
Oh, gosh, you didn't want what I had. Trust me. It was bad.
Listen, I don't know. The DoubleTree Marriott at outside the Jacksonville airport.
I could not move in my hotel room at the airport. I missed my connection in London. And there's a hotel at the airport called the Aerotel. And it's super convenient for the fact that you don't have to get in a car the next day, that you can walk straight down into the tunnel to go hop on the train to walk, or, you know, hop onto the train to your terminal. So that was nice having that. But I also have my golf clubs here. I have three, technically five thing pieces with me. I have my coat and tie bag. I have my gym bag, my backpack, golf clubs, clothes. And I'm probably not going to even play golf over these course of 2 weeks. I'm just literally lugging my clubs around everywhere. But It was unfortunate. I missed my connection, and there was no flights to either Belfast or Dublin yesterday afternoon and evening. Everything was sold out, and even into this morning, everything was sold out in London. So they actually changed airlines from British Airways to Aer Lingus. So instead of me flying to Belfast, which was an hour drive to Portrush, I go to Dublin. So now it's a three-hour drive. So I woke up at 3:30 in the morning after 3 hours of sleep. Didn't go back to sleep. So I've been up since 3:30 in the morning. It's currently 8 p.m. And we'll see how long I last. If I just kind of like hit the deck here, just know that it's not congestive heart failure. This is just me going down.
Yeah, I similarly set the alarm for 3:30 a.m. this morning. I might be adding another airline to the no-fly list. I just might, Smiley.
What airline?
Delta.
Dude, shut up. Like,
dude,
shut up.
Dude,
if you're adding Delta to the no-fly list,
I don't know what I'm going to fly.
You're going to just fly private. Like, that's all you can fly.
I might not be able to fly anymore. I had a side conversation. I mean, this is they pushed this flight back. We all thought it was weather. It was a crew. They said it was an unexpected crew issue. So now I had to stay in the airport hotel down in Jacksonville and miss a night with my family because they just couldn't get it together from a scheduling perspective. I have been a Delta guy. I'm usually like a Delta Southwest guy, and you're on notice, Delta. Just know that. I flatly refuse to fly American Airlines. I will not do it. So United, you're up. Let's see what you got.
United. I actually flew United to Tahoe and flew on, I think, one of their nicer planes I've ever been on with them. So
good.
United definitely moving up in the books for sure.
I think
they're my number two. They're my number two.
And Delta's your one, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to give United a crack.
American actually is third and Southwest fourth. But I've not ever flown JetBlue. So I know people like JetBlue, but we don't have a JetBlue deal with Birmingham, so I'm sure people do like that airline.
I'm mixed on JetBlue. American Airlines is a budget airline masquerading as a major airline, and that's all I'm going to say about it. I will not do it. I will not do it ever again. This is not actually an airline podcast. This is an Open Championship preview podcast, despite the open here. And it's time to get right into an Open Championship look ahead, brought to you by our friends at Ahead. Ahead is a strategic partner for enterprise clients, helping them navigate the path toward digital transformation, much like an expert caddy reading the course ahead and providing the winning combination of technology and execution. You can learn more about them at ahead.com. Smiley, the caddy aspect, it's going to be important this week at Royal Portrush. You were just out there taking a first look. I'm going to read a few course facts here. This course was designed by Harry Colt, H.S. Colt, back in 1888, and Martin Ebert did some series of renovations in the last decade or so. It is a par 71, 36 in the first nine, 35 coming home, and it is just shy of 7,400 yards. Fescue everywhere except for in the rough, where it's a mix of bent grass, indigenous grasses, and wildflowers. And then in the key agronomy personnel section of the GCSAA report, we have a very important person or a being to note here, the golf course dog, Bella the Beagle. So that is your rundown on Royal Portrush.
Huh?
Bella the Beagle. Let us know. Snap a pic if you see Bella out there on the grounds this week. And give her a pet. What do you have for us, having seen the course on, you know, a little bit of jet lag, no sleep out there today? What are your notes?
I have seen 14 of the holes. So I walked 1 through 13 and then just cut over to 18 so I could catch a ride or I would have finished it I would have probably got done another 45 minutes later. But I walked with Bryson and Laurie Cantor for the front nine. So that was really nice just to kind of, watch ball fights, watch how far the ball was going, kind of get a good perspective of how the golf course is playing. But it's, I tell you what, Charlie, it's surprised me. It has surprised me in a way that I wasn't expecting. It's much more difficult than I expected. There's much more unlevel wise. So there's just the fairways kind of have all these humps and bumps kind of going through them. But up around the greens, there's way more slope than I anticipated. When I think about some of the last couple Open Championships, we go back to Liverpool and Troon, only a few holes can really compare to what I really saw, you know, over the consistent 18 holes here. There's some really, really steep edges on just about every hole, whether it's, you know, all on the green side where everything's kind of working away into collection areas, or, you know, the other side of the green has, you know, the side to miss, but also there's a mounds that you can use, but those are also really steep. So that was the big surprise.
Elevated greens with runoffs, like that type of a, yeah.
Yes. That would be, I would say, a majority of the theme. And But the runoffs sometimes are into the rough area, and then sometimes the runoff is into the fairway area. And there's really, you know, I found it kind of tricky and difficult to really figure out where exactly to chip from, because like you can get so many weird bounces out there to where, you know, a lot of times these guys go throw balls down and chip from areas that they know they'll be getting up and down from. But it's like a box of chocolates out there. There's no telling where your golf ball is going to end up on some of these holes, and some of the lies that you may get, because I found that the fescue indigenous grasses that you kind of just referred to be a bit of a problem. I think there are some thick areas that you can lose some golf balls, if not, you know, just kind of advancing it down the fairway. But I would say that would be the big surprise to me, was that it really, you know, around the greens, the amount of slope definitely was something I wasn't expecting. And then also, and I kind of knew this going into it, just listening to some interviews from Rory and Shane, and they kind of talked about how well bunkered the golf course is off the tee, and the fact that you can't really take out the bunkers on certain holes. You know, a lot of places that Rory can go, he can find a way to take the bunkers out of play. Well, for the majority of this golf course, of the par fours and fives, there are bunkers that are at every single step. So let's just say that there's a 2-iron bunker, a 3-wood bunker, and a driver bunker. And so you're having to make a decision based off the changing wind directions and conditions on what bunker you're going to be taking out of play. And sometimes you can't take any of them out of play. You just have to make a decision. All right, this is the bunker we're going to have to avoid, the middle bunker. We're going to hit this club, and we got to keep it left of it, or we got to keep it right of it. So in these bunkers too, I'll say, are different than like Troon, where Troon's the ball would run into a very flat bunker. These bunkers, I would say, are pitched up a little bit more to where the sand is kind of built up to where everything will kind of work back into the bottom. And then the backside, as the ball is rolling in, is kind of downsloped to where everything is going to end up in the bottom, versus other events like Troon, where the ball would run all the way into a grass revetted steep face where it's up against the lips. I don't think it's going to be a week where you're going to be able to advance too much from the fairway bunkers. I'm not saying, it's just a different contrast. Like one being, you know, the way they look is much more built up from the fairway bunker standpoint, where you would just be able to see the grass revetted faces from tee boxes. And these, you can kind of see some sand to be able to give you a little bit of a visual of kind of what you're looking at. So I would say that is kind of the nuts and bolts of what I kind of just saw. So a bunch of slope, uneven lies, I think some crazy bounces, and then bunkers that are kind of well positioned off the tee.
This is so interesting, taking each of those things one by one. You know, bunkering off the tee that doesn't necessarily favor a longer or a shorter hitter, more so just making a decision as to which one you want to avoid and making a club choice off of that. And then approaches where, you know, whether you're a good ball striker or not, you know, we watched Bryson on the range hitting these little stabby punch shots. We watched Johnson Wagner out there throwing balls off of mounts and trying to hit these kind of low runners to chase them back to hold locations in the back of the green. But it sounds like from what you're describing that, you know, approach play, precision approach play is going to be at a premium. But then you factor in all the classic Open Championship elements, you know, changing winds, whether you're going to have rain, overcast, sunny, and you know, all those variables have a huge role in what type of shots you're going to be able to hit, you know, whether you're going to try to kind of fly in the air and fly it all the way to the hole or hit it short. Are you seeing a profile of player that's going to stand out, or is it just going to be the player that has the greatest amount of creativity and willingness to be mentally flexible as the conditions change?
Yeah, I would kind of look at who can avoid big misses off the tee. So I would look at distance from the edge of the fairway. So like who is avoiding the big outlier miss? You know, those are you want a player who's like really consistent with, you know, like their lines are, you know, if they miss fairways, it's, you know, balls are landing close to the edges of the fairways, because where you really start to get in trouble on this golf course is with some big misses. Like you can run into some really big problems, whether it's not being able to find your golf ball, or hitting it out of bounds. You know, there's some couple instances where you can definitely lose a golf ball out of bounds. So you don't want a super inaccurate driver. You want somebody who can kind of hit it right where they're looking for the most part. And when they do miss, it's not too far offline. And from there, I would probably say, sure, the par threes, typical with all open championships, you got to be able to kind of hold crosswinds. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a shot that most likely you'll have to hit. But I would kind of go to who's like really nice around the greens. Like I think short game is going to be really, really important this week. Guys who feel really comfortable hitting bumps to hole locations where you can't see but only half of the pin. So somebody who's very creative in how they play around the greens, and can play with a lot of confidence in hitting a lot of different shots, whether they're putting off of the edges of the bottoms of the greens up a steep slope, and have the touch to be able to get those up and down. Those are the two biggest keys to me, is who can drive it fairly straight and who's going to be able to get balls up and down. And then from there, I think, you know, of course, iron play is important, right? Like, I'm not going to say you're going to have to do all things well to win the Open Championship. But those are you know, if I'm starting to build a profile, I'm looking at like the Tommy Fleetwoods, the Russell Henleys, the Sepp Strakas, the Shane Lowrys, Tyrrell Hatton. Mm-hmm. These are the types of players that I would prefer this week. And even I would go into like the Jordan Spieth of the creative type of player who can get up and down.
First name that came to my mind when you're talking about creativity around the green. I mean, creativity in general.
Scotty too. Scotty.
Yeah, Scotty.
Yeah. Scotty would be also in that. I mean, shocking. Scotty's in the profile, but that's kind of where my head's going when I see this golf course and kind of who I expect to play well. I don't see somebody going out there and getting away with missed tee shots, because I think the penalty is going to be too steep.
Have you seen a weather report, and does it favor a certain wave this week?
It looks as if the PM AM draw appears to be a little bit better from a wind standpoint on Thursday. So today we had a north wind, and we're expecting it a south wind, I think, Thursday through Saturday is what I've been told. And then Sunday going back to north. And Saturday's, I think it makes the golf course play a little easier, that south wind versus the north. I think some of the more difficult holes and even the drivable hole, the fifth hole, with a north wind, you can't get there. And then it's also like left or right wind on some of the challenging holes. So I think it'll play a little bit easier than what I just witnessed out there today in a north wind. So I expect scoring to be, I'm not saying like super low, but I'm also thinking that I think the conditions may help the guys be able to kind of get some scoring going.
There is your kind of sketch on Royal Portrush, and it's a perfect segue, because Smiley, I was wrong the last time we recorded an episode. If you were watching this at the time, the day we are releasing this, which would be Wednesday, July 16th, this is your very last chance to enter the Dream Ireland Golf Getaway Sweepstakes by ShipStakes. Three lucky winners, all of whom are going to receive plus ones for this trip, will receive an all-expenses-paid trip to the island of Ireland, where they'll play six world-class courses, including Royal Portrush, course, hosting the Open Championship this week. The itinerary is October 8th through 15th of this year, 2025. The courses you'll play: Royal Portrush, Port Marnock, Royal County Down, Castle Rock, Ballyliffin, and Port Stewart. And of course, we'll put the link to the sweepstakes in this YouTube episode and our podcast description. So this is last chance.
I mean, that is just an absurd list to golf courses.
There's actually one more on the course I wanted to ask you about, specific to this one. Xander made comments about Port Rush. Again, you can play this if you win the Ship Six sweepstakes, so go enter. But just saying how last week at the Scottish, obviously it looks pretty brown on TV, hardly taking any divots. And then he said this week, readjusting to taking more divots. Is it just, you know, further north, more lush, more water on the golf course? I guess there are different degrees of Lynx golf. And this, of course, as we talk about the top, fescue, that same sort of old world grass you expect in a lot of these Lynx courses. But what's the difference that Xander's getting at there?
I would say that if we're going to compare the difference between Port Rush and the Renaissance, we'll have to start that they're on two different islands. So yes. Instead of going north, they're actually, you have to go across a body of water.
Of course. The point I was making is, it is, if you're drawing a longitude line, a latitude line, like it is, the Renaissance is more south. Now you got me in a pretzel here. It is further south.
I wanted to see how you're going to spin this one.
It's further south longitudinally in Scotland than sure. Port Rush is.
I gotcha. Yeah. Robert McIntyre was actually talking about the same thing, is that last week Bobby Mac and Cheese was struggling a little bit with the firm conditions, with how it's like hitting off a cart path. You know, you kind of struggle to be able to kind of make a divot. So everything's just bouncing off the turf. So that can be, I always found it tough with wedges because it, you know, when you're used to making that divot, it's just bouncing straight off. It's hard to hit your numbers. The ball kind of sails on you, I think, a little bit more. So from what I saw today, I mean, I wouldn't call it soft. It's not soft by any means, but you can definitely make a divot. But I still feel like it's a firm golf course and very just natural. Like the greens, what are the green surfaces? Did you say
all fescue?
Yeah, and yeah. it looks ratchet a little bit. Is a way to describe it. It's not the sexiest looking grass you've ever seen. It's kind of, I don't know if thatchy is the right word, but it just appears to me that it's unusual and different.
Well, and that's why, and I don't know if this term is exactly correct, but when I describe playing over there to people, it's like it's old world. It's like, this is grass that's been here for many, many years. It's not like someone came in and put the latest strain of Bermuda down and has it, you know, watered and sub. It's like, this is very, but I think there's a cool part of that where it gives it that firmness and that linksiness that just makes it a different type of golf where you can hit a bunch of different shots. I mean, Scotty talked about this last week at the Scottish, of just, you know, instead of going to the practice facility, the short game facility with a 56 and a 60, he's got all the way up to 8 iron. And so it goes back to the point you're making about who's going to succeed this week. It's like someone who can really imagine a lot of different shots around those greens and have a good feel for how that fescue's playing.
Totally. And creativity is going to be awarded at this golf course. It's going to be interesting. I think Bryson said this to me today. He said, if you're a ball striker, you're going to be kind of licking your chops out here. This is a place where you can't really fake it around.
I love it. Well, let's start talking about some of these players in the field this week. We're going to start, as we always do for these major championship previews, at the top of the board. Scottie Scheffler, I think I saw this factoid come through about an hour ago, opens as the favorite for all four majors this season. He's going off at plus 450. And I'm also going to read to you the Data Golf win percentage prediction here, because it's interesting how it aligns for a lot of guys with the board, but also it's a little bit different as we kind of start to move down. So Scottie, also the favorite on Data Golf, 14.4% chance to win. His tee time on Thursday is 10:09 a.m. local, playing alongside Colin Morikawa and Shane Lowry. Smiley, Scotty had some comments today on the topic of fulfillment. It was about a 5-minute discussion back and forth. I have a minute and 30-second excerpt that I kind of chopped up that I'm going to play for you here, and we'll react to it on the back end.
It's fulfilling from a sense of accomplishment, but it's not fulfilling from a sense of like the deepest, you know, places of your heart. You know, there's a lot of people that make it to what they thought was going to fulfill them in life. And then you get there and all of a sudden you get to number one in the world and then they're like, what's the point? And, you know, I really do believe that because, you know, what is the point? You're like, why do I want to win this tournament so bad? That's something that I wrestle with on a daily basis. It's like showing up at the Masters every year. It's like, why do I want to win this golf tournament so badly? Why do I want to win the Open Championship so badly? I don't know. Because if I win, it's going to be awesome for about 2 minutes. And then we're going to get to the next week, and it's going to be like, hey, you won two majors this year. How important is it for you to win the FedEx Cup playoffs? And it's just like, we're back here again, you know? You know, I'm kind of a sicko. I love putting in the work. I love being able to practice. I love getting out to live out my dreams. But at the end of the day, sometimes I just don't understand the point, you know, because I don't know if I'm making any sense or not, but I love being a father. I love being able to take care of my son. I love being able to provide for my family out here playing golf. And, you know, every day when I wake up early to go put in the work, you know, my wife thanks me for going out and working so hard. And when I get home, I try and thank her every day for taking care of our son. It's just, you know, that's why I talk about families being my priority, because it really is. You know, I'm blessed to be able to come out here and play golf, but if my golf ever started affecting my home life or it ever affected the relationship I have with my wife or with my son, you know, that's going to be the last day that I play out here for a living.
This has been taken in a lot of different ways by a lot of different people. And I wonder how you take it upon hearing him talk about this.
How do you take it? Let me ask you.
I'm happy to start because I was watching this. I just gotten back from the airport and I'm sitting here in my office. My wife's sitting on my couch and I'm sitting on the floor with my daughter, who's about 9 months old, and she's using a tea. I should add a clean tea as a teething tool. And it's hard to even say this right now without kind of welling up a little bit, because I just felt like it's two things stood out to me. The first is where he ends that statement. And it's just, you know, we love the game of golf. We sit here and talk about this a couple times a week, Smiley, but it really, I love where Scotty's head is at all times, but especially here, of like what's important in life and the way he prioritizes family and being a dad. You and I are, you know, it means a lot to us as well. It means more to us than golf. And I felt like him taking the platform this week at a major and saying that is a pretty meaningful thing. And it, you know, my wife was like, is that Scotty talking? Like he's just the best. And it's like, yeah, it's really, it frames everything. But I think what's getting lost there is like, he's process oriented, and he says it throughout. I wish I could play the full 5 minutes, but he still talks about how much he loves the game of golf, and we know how competitive he is and how much he's dedicated to the process of getting better every day and working hard at it every day. And I think really, you know, some could read this as being anti-competitive or anti-attached result. I think it's the opposite. It's like, he's not defining himself based on who wins a trophy, shoots the best score. It's like, am I every day going out and giving all that I have to getting better at this game that I absolutely love? And is that feeling fulfilling to me? And that to me, I thought was, I loved all of that so much, specifically the parts I selected, but it hit me that way. And it just, it's yet another reason why I love just about everything about Scottie Scheffler.
Well, it's the chase, that kind of comes to my mind. It's the chase to being great and one of the best of all time. And I think that is what he will always be measured against in the game of golf, is how great Scottie Scheffler can be. And I think that'll be something that, you know, with Tiger, how many majors is Scottie going to win? These are things that he will be asked for the rest of his career. And we will continue to talk about it for the rest of his career, because you know why? Because he is the best. And I can understand exactly where he's coming from, because this game of golf, he wins a lot, but he wins way more than anybody else. But he also does fail a bunch, and he's very competitive psycho. It's a vicious cycle that you can get into where, you know, it's you have ups, you have downs, but also it's kind of difficult to, you know, process, compartmentalize different aspects of your life at times, and it could suffocate you. You could feel like you have nothing else but to think about is your golf game. And that's where I think Scotty's perspective in all this is really cool. The fact that maybe he will go through struggles one day, and that he can just lean on his family in that time, and that he doesn't lose himself in the game of golf, and that he is able to you know, still be the dad that he is when he's playing good golf. So all that being said, I agree with you. You know, it's refreshing to hear that. I never really knew where this whole 5-minute excerpt was going to go. Like once he started going, he would like get to a point and then he'd go backwards. I never knew exactly where we were going to finish on like what his thought was. But overall theme was that you definitely understand. I can understand from his perspective when he wins a golf tournament, how quickly that can go, and then how we can also point that exact same thing we're talking about to Rory McIlroy, and how he's, you know, chased something his entire life, and then he finally got there. And he's like, wait, is it not supposed to feel a little different than this? Is it not supposed to feel? Is it like this was what everybody said I must have? And I'm not saying that he felt this exact thing, but it's like, well, now what, you know, what's next? And I think that for any great player, they have to find a way to either keep resetting goals, or they have to find a way to walk away. You know, it's either one or the other. 'Cause like these guys are so good. It's like Novak Djokovic. They talked about this the other day when he was hurt in the semifinal match, when Novak Djokovic cannot go and beat Alcaraz and Sinner, he's going to eventually walk away from this game because he just knows that, hey, this is the bar I've set for myself.
It's so interesting to me. I think the next player we're going to talk about is Rory McIlroy, and framed against comments he's made about, you know, post winning the Masters of, to many, you look at that and say, that's it. That's all he has to do. He wins the Grand Slam. You know, one of only six guys to do that. And then we watched what that was like for him in the months following, and it didn't seem like it was all that. And you hear people talk about that a lot of, you know, just you make your goal is to make $1 million and you make a million. And then it's like, oh, that wasn't enough. Now I want to make $10 million. And you know, if the whole way you're deriving fulfillment is through just achieving goals, it's not actually a very healthy way to go about life. You know, it's like, let's find processes that make you feel fulfilled or better you as a person and focus on those every single day. A lot of this connects to, like, you know, atomic habits, you know, like just that sort of that whole line of thought about how to go about bettering yourself shouldn't be attached to, like, can I get to this place? It's like, can I do a thing every single day that makes me a better person? I also think on the athletic side too, it's, you're talking about Djokovic, it's hard to, you know, a lot of these guys find their full identity in a sporting sense. And the moment you're unable to compete, it's why we see so many guys hang on too long and the ends of their careers look, you know, not as great as it did when they were dominant at the beginning of it, because it's like, what am I going to do when I don't have this sport anymore? And so that's why I think it's wonderful hearing guys like that who are number one in the world, you know, the best player in the sport right now compared to some of the greats I've ever played the game. And he's sitting up there and he's telling you, you know what, like, that's not it for me. You know, it's cool. I love it. It's great. I love this process. It's a passion, yeah. But like, I'm rooted in more than that.
Well, he's very grounded in his faith, and he's been vocal about that. Golf is not his identity. And I think that's a huge part of it. And I think it kind of came out in that interview.
Yeah, perhaps the most relatable part of that, and you mentioned this throughout the weaving 5-minute thing, is he stopped in the middle, he goes, is that making sense at all? I do that all the time. Like, just kind of say a lot of stuff. I'm like,
welcome to the podcast world, Scotty. Welcome to the podcast world.
Let's talk a little bit about Scotty on the course this week. You mentioned creativity around the green. Obviously, just about every place profiles well for Scotty Scheffler. Are you anything you want to add there about the way Port Rush suits his game, what he's going to find challenging. I know we've seen at times that two-way miss off the tee, and you mentioned that if you kind of miss, you know, bad either direction, that's where you could really get in trouble. Do you worry about that for him this week?
No, this – you just can't have a two-way miss out of this place. Yeah. I think it's a really good golf course for Scotty. I think he's going to have a really good week, and he's going to be there in contention for sure.
Okay. Well, let's then move next to Rory McIlroy. He has the second shortest odds on DraftKings Sportsbook, plus 750. Surprisingly, not the next highest win percentage on DataGolf. We'll get to that player next. But he is 5.4% chance is predicted by DataGolf to win this tournament. His tee time, 3:10 p.m. local, alongside Justin Thomas and Tommy Fleetwood. And alluded a little bit to it earlier, on a similar theme to Scotty, maybe a little bit different. You know, we put out something on our social media today, that victory lap, that the discussion he had in his press conference about, you know, what the last few months have been like for him. In some ways, this feels like it's a release for him. And I love Rory this week, even though he's had, you know, a ton of media coverage. All Brandel Chambly was on the live from set, you know, holding up different local newspapers and showing how many different, you know, places have written articles about him. There's like a local coffee shop that changed their name to put Rory in their name this week. I mean, is it, despite all that, do you feel like even though there's more eyeballs on him, there's less pressure on him this week because he's back home and seemingly more relaxed?
Well, I'm actually a little surprised that he has the course record of this golf course at 61 when he shot that when he was 16 years old, because to me, this golf course, if you're going to win this Open Championship, you have to play with such conviction in your lines off the tee. And he's such an aggressive player by nature, but he does dial it back when he needs to. He proved that at the Players Championship this year. And I think he's going to have to exercise a little bit of that patience in his game to kind of let it come to him a little bit. I know he's playing better over the last couple of weeks, but it's not a place where you can just go balls to the wall, let's just bang driver, go find the golf ball and have an advantage with his length. It's a golf course that you just can't shoot yourself out of the golf tournament. I think if anything, Rory learned from 2019 was, of course, he got off to a terrible start making a quad at the first hole. He probably learned what the feelings are going to be back playing in front of this Northern Ireland crowd that's going to be wanting him to win so badly. So he'll first have to kind of check off the mental side of the game, which I think he'll be ready for. But the overall golf side, I think the game plan is important. I think they really need to trust what this golf course is going to provide to them every day. If the south wind is a wind in which he can be aggressive, then let it. What be aggressive, but also just I think exercising a little bit of patience is kind of where I'm at right now with Rory.
Well, in the game plan piece, it's interesting you say that, because I was listening to Brandel talk about this in relation to Bryson DeChambeau. You know, when you're playing an Open Championship where so much of what you're going to get throughout the week could be unpredictable, how much of it is this is what the game plan is, this is what club we're going to hit on this tee, and how much of it is totally. Just being flexible? Or do you have like three or four different seasons, plans?
Man. Yeah. It changes with the seasons. I mean, I was on the fourth hole today with Cantor and Bryson, and all of a sudden this big kind of storm comes through. It gets colder, windy on this par four fourth hole, the hardest hole in the golf course. Cantor had driver 2 iron short of the green, where he was playing just ridiculously hard, and Bryson snap hooked his first. I don't even know if he would have found his golf ball. So that's that you have to be very adjustable based on the conditions. So definitely yes, that would be the answer. And I think Rory's strategy this week would be just to kind of keep in touch. Keep in touch with the top of the board. You don't have to go, well, you know, this doesn't need to be a runaway freight train where you go win by 8 shots. I think if Rory can just play conservative golf and just kind of pick and choose, you know, keep kind of the bogeys at bay and the big numbers at bay, he can win this golf tournament. But I think it's going to be with a little bit of more caution and just kind of keeping everybody in his vicinity until he kind of gets that run maybe over the weekend.
The next player on this DraftKings Sportsbook odds board, the only other player shorter than 20-1 odds, John Rahm going off at 12-1. But this was not a huge surprise to me, but a little bit. Data Golf gives him a full percentage point more of a chance to win this golf tournament than Rory at 6.4%. His tee time on Thursday, 9:58 a.m. local, with Xander Schauffele and JJ Spahn. We've seen a little bit of a trend line this year in majors, Smiley. After a disappointing 2024, you know, the PGA was right there in and around it. U.S. Open was tough on everyone at Oakmont, but, you know, he's, I believe it was a T7, somewhere in the top 10. Why do you, first of all, do you agree with Data Golf here? Do you like Rahm's game more at Port Rush than Rory's?
Yeah, I do. I do. Really? I just think John's I think just driving it a little bit straighter. I think his ball striking off the tee, I would probably take his over Rory's. I think Rory just although it's much better, you could get away with some misses at Renaissance Club. You know, it's a drier golf course. Rough's going to be a little on the fescue side. I mean, this is a healthy indigenous grasses in this fescue rough area that are going to swallow up some golf balls, especially with the potential rain in this forecast. I would put Scotty, Rahm, and then probably Rory, Bryson as like of that group of four guys. That's kind of how I would probably rank them.
You just mentioned his name right there, Smiley. You were out walking around with him today. Bryson DeChambeau, he's the next on this board, going off at 20-1 with a 4.3% chance on Data Golf to win this tournament. His tee time, 2:48 p.m. local on Thursday, with Bobby Mac and Cheese and Justin Rose. Just give us, let's start with, what was the mad scientist up to today? What was he? All sorts of hijinks, correct?
Yes. He was given a golf ball from somebody in Spain, and he's been testing a bunch of different dimple types of golf balls because he's been trying to get his golf ball to have less curvature in the air.
Oh, man.
So this is like a non-conforming golf ball, and he just has one of them. And he kept on hitting it off on different shots, on different holes, and be like, see, guys, look at that. And it's like the ball is like not even moving. It was insane. I mean, it was pretty wild. Like he had an iron shot on the sixth hole that, I mean, there was no wind on the shot. Like, for instance, it was a 20-25 mile an hour wind off the right. This ball is getting hammered and moved to the left, but he hits this this like heavy sand ball is the best way to describe it, with no dimples, and it doesn't curve at all. And he's like, yeah, see, look. It's called a Polera
golf balls. Okay, I want to look this up.
And
I mean, I just
and on it, it says it. Ultimate straight. And
wow,
I don't think it's ever been a conforming ball, but he's in the market to try to find a golf ball.
I'm looking at him right now.
That doesn't curve as much, because his ball goes so high up in the air, and he thinks that with long players that the golf balls curve too much. So he's on a mission to find a ball that's going to curve less.
Let's talk to your buddies at Strixon and get like a dozen of Poleras and just get them to like reskin them so people think they're conforming. And then I'll just dominate in Hope Valley Men's League and no one will be the wiser. I think there's something in there for me to kind of work at here. You tell me, like, I'm obviously never played professional golf. Does it seem a little bizarre that you're going to the fourth major championship of the year, and you're trying to get your numbers dialed in, you're trying to see how the wind performs, and you're playing a non-conforming golf ball in like one of your few practice rounds? I mean, it's hilarious. It's great content. It just seems a little bit wonky to me.
Man, when he chipped with it, it was hysterical, because it was it came off like so high in the air on just like a basic chip. It would just go like this and go, woo, boop. It was a knuckleball and it wasn't ever spinning. Like, you could never hit a low checking shot. Laurie Cantor and I are just like, we're just giggling, watching how much fun he was having with this non-conforming golf ball.
And then the other cool thing, he was on the range, I guess it was yesterday, with our boy from Estonia, Richard Tedder, I think his name is pronounced. I think I've gotten a little bit better at pronouncing his last name. And they had a long drive contest. They're mashing it out there. Apparently, yeah, he's Richard's favorite player. It's funny how we've talked less and less in the past, you know, year or so about the whole live PGA Tour thing. And maybe it's just lack of interest. Maybe it's we think this thing's going to come together. But that's the one constant reminder for me of just I just always miss Bryson, because he's just such a content machine.
Well, it's interesting about the Open Championship and kind of his record in these Open Championships, how it hasn't necessarily been a great resume. Mm-hmm. And I kind of attribute to the amount of information that mm-hmm. he has to kind of work through, where, you know, the wind is just so much heavier. You know, it's such a heavy wind you have to deal with, and how it affects it on slow greens, and how the wind change can be, you know, 5 to 7 miles an hour from when you're standing over the putt to when you hit it, and how that affects, you know, the math in which how far he takes back the club on a putt. And I don't necessarily worry about his iron game quite as much as maybe another week, because he mashes down on it, so he can bring the flight down. He can work it both ways. I watched him hold fades into right to left wind, so he's capable of hitting those shots. And I think he should probably do more of it. Like the better shots he hit
hitting
today,
those draws over and over again.
He just kept on wanting to like hit draws, and then he would just kind of blame the overdraws on the golf ball. Where I'm like, I think you should just hit the one that holds it, but.
Do you see which irons? Do you have the LA Golf little, irons in there, or do you have like those Avodas? Do you look at his bag at all?
He had those lab shafts. I didn't look at the irons, what they were, but they looked like the ones that he'd been playing, I think. I don't know.
I think he trialed the LA Golf ones, but then he was back to the Avodas. I don't know.
They look like the whatever you call them, the Avodas. But it's interesting on how. Like for him to have a really good week, first off, he played really well today. Like there's nothing like that wasn't that I didn't like what I saw. Mm. It's more so, I think, you know, because there's so many, you can't eliminate bunkers here. So you have to find a way to play a little bit more conservative and plot your way around. And will Bryson have the patience to do that? And he's proven he can be patient at U.S. Opens, but at Open Championships, it seems he's kind of gone with more of the bomb and gouge approach at times. And mm-hmm. it hasn't nearly kind of worked out, and he hasn't kind of gauged the weather conditions perfectly and kind of all the crazy bounces that you can get that aren't quite the normal bounce that you would get at a certain place. You know, you can get some really poor breaks on this golf course this week.
Yeah, Brandel said something to like a similar effect on live from of just, you know, he is so to your point, formulaic with, you know, not only wind direction and wind strength, but like air density and green density and all these things. And that a guy that needs to have all the math right all the time, because it's the helpful. Open is such
but
a changing set
helpful.
Of conditions.
Right. Like, what do
you
think?
So
you think
it's a positive?
You can use that to your advantage. To, you know, being able to calculate how many inches outside the hole the putt is with a crosswind of mm-hmm. a 15 mile an hour crosswind. He can literally calculate these things. That is an advantage that's that amazing. He has. And, you know, that nobody else can do that. So there is advantages to this, but you have to wonder when is it going to kind of work out in his favor with that?
It's interesting. I hope he's in the mix just for sheer entertainment value alone.
It was crazy on his last hole of the day. He hit 3 wood off the tee. There was a pretty big crowd right off the ninth tee. And some of the guys were like, oh, we came all the way out here for this. And Bryson was like 10 yards down the fairway. He's like, you want me to hit a driver? And everybody's like, hell yeah. And so he goes back and he hits a driver. And then he like literally tiki torches up his driver in the air like he just slain a dragon and everybody's just going nuts. And you're just like what world am I in right now?
Golly.
It was hard not to laugh. I was just giggling.
So good. So good. Greater team of value.
Great sunset going on out here.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
See it working across your face there. You got a little lighting adjustment going on. You're doing some live production here. I love that. I love that.
That's right.
The reigning champion golfer of the year, at least for another day and few hours, Xander Schauffele, the next man, next name on the board, going off 25-1, a 2.9% chance via Data Golf to win this tournament, which is lower than a few additional names that are beneath him in terms of odds. He has that 9:58 a.m. local tee time on Thursday with John Rahm and JJ Spahn. State of Xander's game right now. I mean, I was looking at the Data Golf blog earlier this week, and effectively, They were just breaking down a stat profile this year in comparison to last year where he won those two majors. And it was just, I think he's driving a little bit further and the iron play is about the same, but it's apparently every other portion of his game has kind of taken a fall off. And you've talked about this a couple of times, just he's, you know, he's five tool guys, putting's been so good in the past. And I just wonder if it was time away with the rib where you get a little rustiness for something like putting or short game where it's a feel thing. But of course, hasn't missed the cut, has that amazing cut streak going. Where are you at on Xander this week? Like, do you think he's played himself back into enough form to contend at Royal Port Rush?
Oh, definitely. I mean, his iron game is, I think, elite enough. And if the putter kind of wakes up from hibernation, definitely, I think he can contend. But he hasn't put himself in contention. He's been on the outside looking in the whole year. So it's hard for me to say that, can he win back to back? Well, surely, yeah, he could definitely win this golf tournament. Xander Schauffele is easily capable of doing that. I think he can easily play with patience on this golf course and kind of let it come to him. But I am worried a little bit about, you know, the outlier misses and just his ability just to keep it in front of him, because I think that's going to be such an important test this week. And can he get a putter that's, you know, he probably needs to be top five in putting, and he hasn't kind of had one of those pop putting weeks in quite some time.
I have a sort of a grab bag of names for you here, some of which you already mentioned could be good fits this week, given the skill set required to succeed at Royal Port Rush. Tommy Fleetwood, 28-1, 3.6% chance to win the tournament, according to Data Golf. Tyrrell Hatton, 30-1 odds to win the tournament, a 2.3% chance via Data Golf. Victor Hovland, also 30-1, with a 2.2% chance to win the tournament. And Ludvig Åberg, 30-1, 2.1% chance to win the tournament. It sounds like of that group, Tommy and Tyrrell are the ones you like the most. I know beginning of the year, we maybe had Vic earmarked to make a run here. I think maybe that was my prediction to win the Open Championship. Who do you like out of that mix of guys? And of course, Ludvig flew close to the sun last week at the Scottish Open. Were it not for a triple on Saturday, might have been in the mix there.
Yeah, I like Victor a lot this week. I think if he can get that little right miss out of there with the driver, and he's a little bit more consistent with that, he's going to have a really good week. His iron game's too good, and I love just like how he's kind of kept on improving throughout the year. So that's been positive for me to see. And then Tommy it's a perfect fit for Tommy. It's a perfect fit for Hatton. And then I've already named a couple other names like Russell Henley. I just love him on this golf course. Even a Maverick McNealy. I think Maverick could kind of plot its way around this place too. So, I think you could see some short game guys kind of get into contention. And when I say short game, I say like Hideki Matsuyama. He's so good with the wedge and might be able to iron it and short game his way to kind of near the top of the leaderboard. I could see Hideki kind of having a really good week, and he's probably way up on the odds board too, just from kind of the year that he's had. Got off to such a hot start too with the win and at Kapalua, but I could see him having a decent week. And Sepp Straka, he's another guy that has had success in Open Championships. I think Sepp Straka is easily a candidate to win his first major championship. And then another guy too that's kind of under the radar, that's sleeping, who's probably gonna be in the Ryder Cup team, is Harris English. He has been just under the radar as any player this year. Go look at the results. They're solid. I wouldn't necessarily put him as like an Open Championship type of player. He's much more of like a US Open mold to me, but hey, Harris he's played too well to this point to where you just can't rule him out. I mean, he's been kind of in and around it a lot in contention.
What's the latest on his caddy situation? Do you see if they cleared him for?
I don't know. There were
appeals made to allow him to caddy for the Open. Yeah. I'm not sure whether or not those were successful. I'm not seeing any updates on that report.
Oh, but this is a Harmon week too. Ooh. It's a Brian Harmon week.
Okay, let me give you a few
this
there
is a because Brian Harmon week.
You've given a couple of good little sleeper names, because Sepp, out of that group you just mentioned, Sepp's going off at 50-1. Hideki's 90-1. Harris, 110-1. And Brian Harman, 120-1. So Harris, a lot of value plays you're giving it.
Yeah, I worry just a little bit with misses off of the tee with Harris, but he's just been so rock solid, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that. I think it's and I think that's in some ways, I mean, of course, we had Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy win two of the three majors to open the season. But JJ Spahn and Oakmont, I mean, I think there are a lot of people that are looking to see, is there going to be another story like that that emerges at Port Rush and wins a first major?
Yeah, so. Totally. So it's I know I just named like a bunch of names, but
well, that's what we do here.
I don't know if that's what people are tuning in for, to see who I like this week, but it's just the pro, like, what are the skills required to play well at this mm-hmm. golf course? And these are all players who I think kind of fit that skill set. Iron plays, is it going to be important? Well, iron play is important at any open championship. Mm-hmm. You got to be able to fight your golf ball and hit all the different types of shots. And the creative aspect, like, that's where Jordan Spieth and Hideki around the greens, and can they have good driving weeks to go along with that? Jordan's driven it great, but the iron game, it's either been hot or cold. Like, either the driver's really good and the iron game's off, or the iron game's good and then kind of the driver could be a little off. So can you mesh well at the same time?
Is Jordan, does the baby bump help or hurt? Like, coming off lack of sleep, you know, is it, where do you think he's at there?
Well, he was giving me a hard time because I was complaining about, guys, I'm rolling into Ireland on like 8 hours of sleep over 2 days. I'm hurting. He's like, you are talking to the wrong crowd right now. Well, like, basically it's like, if you're not sending a mimosa, a boom tower, then get out of here. We do not need that energy here in Ireland this week.
And by the way, he's right. And we should also say a warm welcome to Sully Spieth and a congrats to Jordan Annie on their
third. All the S's. All the S's. Yeah, right. So they got Sammy, Sophie, and Sully.
Love that. Love that. A little couple S, you know, you got to get the alliteration going. That's a yeah. nice little
They didn't know what they were going to have, going to have a boy or girl. So it's kind of cool. We're going to have boys kind of right around the same age.
The picture of it, of his fingers, you know, it was like a true like workman's hands. You know, it's, dude, a guy
who's, his calluses are a problem. Whew. They but it's are, like, you can't. They're wild. Like, when you don't want
to do anything
close.
About that, though, right? Like, I mean, you could obviously do some sort of care to those, but that's once you remove those, it changes materially the way you swing a golf club, correct?
I mean, just how he grips it. Grips it so weird, you know, like he's got that finger hanging off. Like, yeah, it's wild.
That's great. Well, hey, two last ones I want to throw at you before we make our one and done picks. The two others that are playing alongside the favorite, Scottie Scheffler, Colin Morikawa going off at 35-1, 2.3% chance to win this tournament for Data Golf, and Shane Lowry also at 35-1, a 1.4% chance, but the man who won the Open Championship the last time it was played at Port Rush. Just heard from Brandel Chamblee earlier this week, who really likes Shane here. And Colin, an interesting case where he's been trying out some different caddies, had Billy Foster last week at the Scottish, missed the cut, but Billy obviously an experienced Lynx caddy. Like, this should be a strong suit of Billy's, kind of guiding Colin around here. What do you like for those guys this week? I mean, I think that both are incredible ball strikers, incredible iron players, but do they have the rest of what they need to hoist the claret jug this week?
You said Colin and who?
Shane Lowry.
Oh, I love Shane this week. Love Shane this week. Did I say I like Shane this week? I like Shane this week.
Okay.
Morikawa? No, not buying it.
It's a tough one, right? Because it's just at the beginning of the year.
It's a good course for him. I'm not buying anything right now. There's just too much external things going on. Changing caddies, you know, changing from a glove to no glove for long irons. Just like bizarre.
Putter tinkering. Yeah.
Like bizarre, just too many changes. You don't see people show up to major championships with constant movement and things with their golf bag or caddies and see them just like pull a rabbit out of the hat and win an open championship.
Well, and that it's an interesting, you know, discussion. I don't know if you have additional thoughts here of just like, when is the right time to make changes? Because there is obviously a train of thought that if you don't feel like you're where you need to be, you know, let's try to fix it now and maybe correct it so the rest of the year we can pick up a win or play a little bit better, find something, whether it's, you know, a new putter or something different to look at, a new caddy, different voice in your ear on the course. But I guess there's also a train of thought of like, you know, you've been close, really close the past 2 years to winning a tournament. It's not like you're playing bad golf. It's just getting over that hump. And do you wait until after the Open Championship to make some of these changes or after the playoffs to make some of these changes? Like, do you have any thoughts there?
I don't think he should have ever fired JJ. I think they're a great team together. He's a fantastic caddy. They work really well together. And now he's on the search of, I mean, Joe Griner, we felt like that was going to be a long-term thing. And I guarantee Joe probably felt the same way, but yeah, it's pretty bizarre.
Also pouring out for Joel Damon and Gino Bonelli.
My sea bass is here. Hold on.
We're keeping that in. We are keeping that in. All right. Well, Smiley now has a warm plate of sea bass sitting in his room. So we are definitely on the clock. That thing could smell.
On the clock.
Yeah, it could start smelling very interesting very quickly. So let's do it, Smiley. Our one and done picks. We're not going to do the DraftKings lineup as we have in the past because we're not together. We can't pass the phone. We're just going to make our picks for this tournament. We've run through a lot of names that you like. You have the first pick this week. I have the spreadsheet up to make sure you don't pick someone a second or third time. Who are you going with at Royal Portrush?
I think John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton are both going to be in contention. I took Tyrrell Hatton at the beginning of the year thinking that this is going to be the week he wins a major championship. But I just think that I have to lean John Rahm over Hatton if I'm going to pick between the two. And I really want to just keep some of my PGA Tour names still for the rest of the season. And for that reason, I'm going to be taking John Rahm.
I like the pick. Data Golf likes the pick. Reminder, we only have four events after this, the 3M, the Wyndham, the St. Jude, and the BMW. And that wraps our one and done season. So keeping a few names in the holster there. I'm looking at that as well. I have not used Scotty left. I don't think any of those events I just listed outweighs this event. I was thinking about using Scotty at the 3M, but that was a joke. Took a little while to get there. I'm going to use Scottie Scheffler here at the Open Championship. I think for all the reasons you listed, a guy that is an amazing iron player, a guy that has a lot of creativity around the green, that seemingly has embraced that challenge. The one thing I worry about a little bit is it seems like this type of grass on the greens frustrates him. And that's been a theme with him with putting over the years of just, it takes time for him to get comfortable on a new grass. And then once he does, he just starts winning in droves. But I need to use him here. I probably should have used him earlier in the year, but I'm going to use him here. And let's hope Scotty gets a second major this season and I can move up. By the way, I'm making moves here. You are third on the FedEx Cup points list and the money list. And I'm now eighth on the FedEx Cup point list and 10th on the money list.
Got some work to do. I've been on a cold streak.
I might catch you.
Need John to have a good week. And yeah, we'll see who wins the Open Championship. It's kind of sad. We're already here. This is our last preview pod for a major. So
it's a real bummer. Well, yeah. Enjoy Ireland. Go enjoy that bass. What are you going to, you try to split the G this week? I guess this Ireland, you gotta be splitting the G a couple times this week.
Gonna have to split the G.
go. If you're listening to this, go out, pour yourself a cold one, split the G, and hope you enjoy this Open Championship at Royal Portrush. And we'll be right back here as we always are with recap journals every single day. So we'll talk to you very soon. Enjoy the Open.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our lovely fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes. So I'm happy to come on and shoot the